Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from John Russell and Brian Lynn. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is John Russell.
Uroš Trenović remembers when his small village in eastern Serbia was home to about 200 families. Now, over 60 years later, his village of Blagojev Kamen is a kind of ghost town. Only 8 people live there now. This kind of population loss can be found in other parts of Serbia, where a shrinking population raises questions about the economic well-being of the country. Population changes are a fact of life across Europe. So Serbia, with a low fertility rate, is like many other countries in Central and Eastern Europe. Serbia takes in a small number of immigrants, but has high migration rates. The World Bank reports that Serbia's population of around 7 million could fall to 5.8 million by the year 2050. That would represent a 25% drop since 1990. The Serbian government considers the shrinking population a kind of national emergency. The United Nations has even stepped in to help. It sent a group of 7 international experts to the country last month on a fact-finding mission. Blagojev Kamen is evidence of the problem. A nearby gold mine kept the local economy alive before and after World War II. The village suffered after the mine closed in the 1990s. Uroš Trenović said there are still gold and other minerals in the mine, but that it needs investment and hard work. "One of my sons is in Germany, and the other one is in Austria," he said. "They visit often, but they have nothing to return to." The changes in Blagojev Kamen are not unusual in a country that experienced years of war and sanctions in the 1990s after the breakup of Yugoslavia. Wolfgang Lutz of Austria is an expert on demographics at the International Institute for Applied Systems Analysis. He told the Associated Press that the main problem is related to the kind of people who are leaving Serbia. "We see that it tends to be the better educated, the more highly skilled, the more highly motivated, mobile people who are leaving, and that is certainly a drain of the human capital," Lutz noted. Serbia's government has tried to stop the decline in population. It has offered financial assistance to families with 2 or more children, supported schools and daycare centers, and given aid to families in rural areas. It is not only Serbian officials who are worried. Serbia's neighbor Croatia has made the pressing issue of demographic challenges a top issue. More than 15% of Croatia's 4.2 million people are living and working overseas. Bulgaria and Ukraine are 2 other countries seeing population declines. Stjepan Sterk, a Croatian expert on demography, thinks the efforts to deal with the problems across the Balkans are not enough. He thinks that the tax system can be amended to support population growth. Demography should be recognized as the essence of economic development so that the most important encouragement tool is directed toward it, he said. I'm John Russell.
Even as a bushfire threatened the rural Australian community of Waitaliba, Gary Wilson and his partner, Julie Willis, decided not to flee their wooden house. The two had a home full of orphaned baby kangaroos to protect. More than 10 of the baby kangaroos, called Joeys, stayed safe inside fabric pouches that hung in the couple's living room. Each piece of cloth looked like the opening in which mother kangaroos carry their young. Wilson and Willis have taken care of wild animals before. Recently, full-grown kangaroos and other wildlife that had left their care long ago came back to the house in search of protection as the fires grew nearer. We had way too many animals in the house and around the house, so we really couldn't go, Wilson told the Reuters news agency from his home. We decided we were going to stay and fight. Their home is now surrounded by burned land and vehicles. At 3 o'clock, it was a beautiful summer's day. By 4 o'clock, it was midnight, Wilson said. You couldn't see any more than 20 yards, and then the firestorm came through and pretty much burned everything. Wilson and Willis defended their home for at least 14 hours with fire extinguishers and water pumps. Their house also had a special device on top that sprayed water on hot ashes falling on the property. Good preparation and very good luck helped the building stay safe, and the motherless animals have survived. But the November fire that hit the small community killed two of Wilson's neighbors. It was a horrible thing, Wilson said. The whole bush has been burnt. It's been vaporized. Willis said she had never seen such fierce fires. She said most animals, such as possums, gliders, lizards, and even many birds, were not fast enough to escape. She said, it's not until after the fires when it really hits you how close you were to dying. But at the time, you are too busy trying to put the fire out. Australia's bushfire season has killed over 30 people and an estimated 1 billion native animals since September. About 2,500 homes have been destroyed, and more than 11 million hectares of dry bushland have been burned through. While Wilson and Willis usually care for Joeys that are rescued after their mothers are struck by vehicles, they are now welcoming an increasing number of fire orphans. Willis said the Joeys will one day be released into the wild. She said, we didn't have children ourselves. This is what we spend our time doing. We think it's worthy, a worthy cause, looking after our babies, no matter what they are.
Samsung Electronics has launched a new foldable phone and several new 5G devices. Samsung announced the telephone and other products during an event Tuesday in San Francisco, California. The new phone is called the Galaxy Z Flip. It goes on sale February 14th. And has a starting price of $1,380. When open, the Galaxy Z Flip is similar in shape and size to most smartphones. When closed, the phone collapses down to half its size in the shape of a square. The Galaxy Z Flip is the company's second foldable phone. Samsung launched its first model, the Galaxy Fold, last year. That phone closes up over the middle and opens up to the size of a small tablet. Technology critics have noted design problems with the Galaxy Fold, which also experienced delays in production. There were also reports that screens on some of the first folds began breaking after just a few days of use. Samsung says the Z Flip's screen is made of a glass-like material. The Galaxy Fold device had a plastic screen. When the Z Flip is closed, users can still see the time, take selfies, and be notified of messages. It can be set up in different positions for taking pictures, watching videos, or typing. Rebecca Hurst is a marketing director at Samsung Electronics. She said at the launch event that the new phone marks a giant step forward for the company. We're changing the shape of the future with the Galaxy Z Flip. This is no ordinary smartphone. It changes everything, Hurst said. Last year, China's Huawei launched a foldable smartphone called the Mate X. And Motorola recently began selling its own flip phone model called the Razr. The device sells for $1,499. The foldable phones represent an attempt by manufacturers to energize a market where sales have slowed. Many people are holding on to their old phones longer, in part because new phones can be costly. In addition, critics say the new products do not necessarily offer major upgrades in performance. Technology experts say since the new foldable models are pricey, they are likely to appeal only to a limited market. Paolo Pescatore studies the mobile phone market for PP Foresight. He told the Associated Press that while there has been a lot of excitement around foldable phones, the devices are likely to go through many changes in coming years. At its product event this week, Samsung also announced three new versions of its Galaxy S smartphone line. The phones include the S20, S20 Plus,
and S20 Ultra. All the S20s promise upgraded cameras and will connect to wireless 5G. 5G is the next generation of wireless technology. It promises much higher internet speeds. The S20 phones will go on sale in the United States on March 6th, with prices from $1,000 to $1,400. Samsung was the top smartphone company in the world last year. But Apple took the number one position in the December quarter, the research service IDC reported. Apple's rise came after a drop in pricing for the iPhone 11 helped the company enjoy its best growth since 2015. Samsung and Apple also face strong competition from Huawei, which finished a close third in market share in the final 3 months of 2019. I'm Brian Lin.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. The United States Constitution guarantees freedoms such as freedom of speech, freedom of the press, and freedom of religion. The Bill of Rights in the Constitution protects these and other individual rights. But the government has not always honored all of the rights in the Constitution. In the 1700s, for example, President John Adams supported laws to stop Thomas Jefferson and the Democratic Party from criticizing the government. During the Civil War, President Abraham Lincoln took strong actions to prevent newspapers from printing military news. And during the 1950s, Senator Joseph McCarthy accused innocent people of being communists and traitors. Some of the most serious government attacks on personal rights took place in 1919 and 1920. A number of government officials took sometimes unlawful actions against labor leaders, foreigners, and others. Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe discuss the campaign that came to be known as the Red Scare.
These actions took place because of American fears about the threat of communism. Those fears were tied closely to the growth of the organized labor movement during World War I. There were a number of strikes during the war. More and more often, workers were willing to risk their jobs and join together to try to improve working conditions. President Woodrow Wilson had long supported organized labor, and he tried to get workers and business owners to negotiate peacefully. But official support for organized labor ended when strikes closed factories that were important to the national war effort. President Wilson and his advisors felt workers should put the national interest before their private interest. They told workers to wait until after the war to demand more pay and better working conditions.
In general, American workers did wait. But when the war finally ended in 1918, American workers began to strike in large numbers for higher pay. As many as 2 million workers went on strike in 1919. There were strikes by house builders, meat cutters, and train operators. And there were strikes in the shipyards, the shoe factories, and the telephone companies. Most striking workers wanted the traditional goals of labor unions: more pay and shorter working hours. But a growing number of them also began to demand major changes in the economic system itself. They called for government control of certain private industries. Railroad workers, for example, wanted the national government to take permanent control of running the trains. Coal miners, too, demanded government control of their industry. And even in the conservative grain farming states, 200,000 farmers joined a group that called for major economic changes.
All these protests came as a shock to traditional Americans, who considered their country to be the home of free business. They saw little need for labor unions, and they feared that the growing wave of strikes meant the United States faced the same revolution that had just taken place in Russia. After all, Lenin himself had warned that the Bolshevik Revolution would spread to workers in other countries. Several events in 1919 only increased this fear of violent revolution. A bomb exploded in the home of a senator from the southeastern state of Georgia, and someone even exploded a bomb in front of the home of Attorney General A. Mitchell Palmer, the nation's chief law officer. However, the most frightening event was a strike by police in Boston, Massachusetts. The policemen demanded higher wages, but the police chief refused to negotiate with them. As a result, the policemen went on strike. When they did, thieves began to break into unprotected homes and shops. Massachusetts Governor Calvin Coolidge finally had to call out state troops to protect the people. His action defeated the strike. Most of the policemen lost their jobs.
All this was too much for many Americans. They began to accuse labor unions and others of planning a revolution. And they launched a forceful campaign to protect the country from these suspected extremists. Leaders of this campaign accused thousands of people of being communists or Reds. The campaign became known as the Red Scare. Of course, most people were honestly afraid of revolution. They did not trust the many foreigners who were active in unions, and they were tired of change and social unrest after the bloody World War. A number of these Americans in different cities began to take violent actions against people and groups that they suspected of being communist extremists. In New York, a crowd of men in military uniforms attacked the office of a socialist newspaper. They beat the people working there and destroyed the equipment. In the western city of Centralia, Washington, four people were killed in a violent fight between union members and their opponents. Public feeling was against the labor unions and political leftists. Many people considered anyone with leftist views to be a revolutionary trying to overthrow democracy. Many state and local governments passed laws making it a crime to belong to organizations that supported revolution. 28 states passed laws making it a crime to wave red flags.
People also demanded action from the national government. President Wilson was sick and unable to see the situation clearly. He cared about little except his dream of the United States joining the new League of Nations. But Attorney General Palmer heard the calls for action. Palmer hoped to be elected president the next year. He decided to take strong actions to gain the attention of voters. One of Palmer's first actions as Attorney General was to prevent coal miners from going on strike. Next, he ordered a series of raids to arrest leftist leaders. A number of these arrested people were innocent of any crime, but officials kept many of them in jail without charges for weeks. Palmer expelled from the country a number of foreigners suspected of revolutionary activity. He told reporters that communists were criminals who planned to overthrow everything that was good in life.
Feelings of fear and suspicion extended to other parts of American life. Many persons and groups were accused of supporting communism. Such famous Americans as actor Charlie Chaplin, educator John Dewey, and law professor Felix Frankfurter were among those accused. The Red Scare caused many innocent people to be afraid to express their ideas. They feared they might be accused of being a communist. But as quickly as the Red Scare swept across the country, so too did it end in 1920. In just a few months, people began to lose trust in Attorney General Palmer. They became tired of his extreme actions. Republican leader Charles Evans Hughes and other leading Americans called for the Justice Department to obey the law in arresting and charging people.
By the summer of 1920, the Red Scare was over. Even a large bomb explosion in New York in September did not change the opinion of most Americans that the nation should return to free speech and the rule of law. The Red Scare did not last long, but it was an important event. It showed that many Americans, after World War I, were tired of social changes. They wanted peace and business growth. Of course, the traditional way for Americans to show their feelings is through elections. And this growing conservatism of the nation showed itself clearly in the presidential election of 1920.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.